National news from a grassroots perspective. You're listening to Groundwire Community Radio News from coast to coast to coast. I'm Will France.
And I'm Asa Hassan. This episode of Groundwire was produced on unceded and unstranded Algonquin territory in Ottawa by Ophira Horowitz. In this edition...
This day is to celebrate the radio, and despite all the new technologies, in many regions of the world, radio is still the most powerful communication tool. And this is why...
We talked about moving parts of the CKXU collection down to the Lethbridge Public Library, so...
Have you ever heard of a residence?
Yes. Yes, I've heard of the residential schools.
Yes.
No.
Residential school? No, I haven't. I'm from a really small town.
But first, here are the headlines. Kinder Morgan, the largest energy infrastructure company in North America, has announced an end to an ongoing legal suit aimed at five local protesters. The company was seeking an injunction to keep people from interfering with work related to the Trans Mountain Pipeline expansion. Alan Dutton, Maya Nissen, Adam Gold, Stephen Colas, and Lynn Urumb were named as part of the suit after demonstrating during a survey expedition in Burnaby, British Columbia. Now, after months of legal issues, the energy magnate is dropping the suit by filing unilateral discontinuance and covering the costs of the defendant's legal counsel. Defendant Alan Dutton recently tried to have the case dismissed by the BC Supreme Court. Though the court rejected his case, Dutton told Burnaby Now that he wasn't about to bury the hatchet just yet. Kinder Morgan is running away from this, regardless of what they are saying. I'm still going to pursue them for costs, he said. They are not getting off the hook. Not all the defendants shared Dutton's zeal, however, with Lynn Quarmby, a professor at Simon Fraser University, voicing her relief to have the suit dropped. I'm elated, and I think that this is an entirely appropriate response, and I'm just relieved for all the defendants, she said.
Union workers who took their case of legal tug-of-war with the government of Saskatchewan to the Supreme Court came out on top this week, as the court issued a ruling in their favor. In a 5-2 majority decision, the Supreme Court struck down the province's controversial Public Service Essential Services Act, which essentially amounts to an anti-strike legislation. The act was struck down as unconstitutional on the ground that it violates Section 2D of the Charter of Rights and Freedoms. Legal work against this motion started following pressure from union groups when the law passed in 2007. The case was initially taken to trial and struck down as unconstitutional by the Regina courts in 2002. The decision was overturned by the Saskatchewan Court of Appeals a year later. Following this ruling, the sitting provincial government has a year to return to the table with new legislation. Zan Youssef is the president of the Canadian Labour Congress. After years of legal back and forth, he applauds the Supreme Court decision, saying it is a clear message about protecting the rights of workers. In an interview with Rabble.ca, he said, "The court has said that the government that uses their unilateral power to take away the public sector's workers' rights to go on strike can't simply do that in an arbitrary way, to be balanced in regard to when essential services exist. More importantly, it has to also lead to a process that will allow workers to achieve fair collective agreements."
And that's it for the headlines. We'll be right back after this.
Groundwire is looking for grassroots coverage with progressive perspectives, voices, and stories of interest to a national audience. By being aired on radio stations across Canada, your piece will do more than connect communities. It will encourage the self-representation of communities, and that is empowering. For more information on how to pitch a headline, feature, or community radio report, email groundwireprod@gmail.com.
Now it's time for our feature stories. First off, Ophira Horowitz brings us this report on World Radio Day.
This coming Friday, February the 13th, is World Radio Day. World Radio Day is a celebration of community radio around the world, with the intent of advancing radio as a modern form of communication. I spoke with Francesco Diazzo, the Secretary General of AMARC, the World Association of Community Radio Broadcasters.
Well, you know, World Radio Day is a celebration launched by UNESCO, the agency of the United Nations promoting cultural diversity. And this year, as in the previous occasions, AMARC will participate, trying to give a small testimony of the community radio sector around the world. This day is to celebrate celebrate the radio, and despite all the new technologies, in many regions of the world, radio is still the most powerful communication tool. And this is why, especially in Africa, we are launching a virtual electronic forum trying to understand the role and how to involve more younger generations into the rural radio world. And for Africa, this is a primary objective. In Asia, on the other hand, they are going to reflect about the radio as a tool for the disaster management in some particular occasions. So, I mean, of course, according to the regions, we are going to reflect around the theme of the radio. But this is, of course, a reflection that will keep us working for the whole year.
This is Ophira Horowitz reporting for Groundwire. Is your station doing something special for World Radio Day this year? Let us know at groundwireprod@gmail.com. Now please listen to the song Green Tubes by Lester Cream from Lethbridge.
Our next two feature stories come from the community radio station CKXU in Lethbridge, Alberta. Benjamin Main brings us this report about a partnership between CKXU and the Lethbridge Public Library to bring vinyl to the people.
This is Benjamin Main reporting for Groundwire from CKXU in Lethbridge, Alberta. Today I'd like to share with you an interview between local community events reporter Jonathan Grant and Lethbridge Public Library CEO Tony Vandenhoevel about the recent collaboration between CKXU and the Lethbridge Public Library. This collaboration's focus is to bring CKXU's vinyl collection to the community and has been dubbed by the partners the Vinyl Revival Experience.
We were going to talk to Tony here about this Vinyl Revival Experience. So what exactly is the Vinyl Revival Experience, Tony?
Well, this whole thing started just almost a year ago when last May we asked the community, how do you fit a community into the library? And through that, we made a connection with CKXU. So last July, we started meeting with them, and one thing that we discovered is your guys' mandate to reach out to the community, be community campus radio, and our mandate to serve the community and be reflective of what the community matched very nicely. And all of us being music fans and the library having a music collection of its own, we talked about moving parts of the CKXU collection down to the Lethbridge Public Library. So CKXU generously donated probably about 800 albums, and we had them all cataloged and placed in the library. And we went and purchased three listening stations, so the public can now come in, and they can enjoy the content that was previously only available here in your station. It's now down at the library. They can come down, play it, listen to it, and discover new music on their own.
I know one of the tracks that you had suggested was the Felice Brothers' Frankie's Gun.
Yeah, it's something, you know, and I think I want this to be for the community about discovering music. I discovered this, am a huge fan of it, so let me know what you think.
Awesome. Well, we're going to be right back to talk to you some more about the Vinyl Revival Experience when we get back here in a moment.
Thank you.
Chicago, every weekend I pick up some cargo. I think I know the bloody way by now, Frankie. And turn the goddamn radio down, thank you. Pull over, count the money, but don't count the 30 in the glove box, buddy. That's for by Lucille some clothes. Bang, bang, bang with Frankie's gun.
He shot me down.
Bang, 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 when Frankie's gone.
He shot me down, Lucille.
He shot me down.
He shot me down.
Work zones, double fines. Don't pass the double lines. Trailer, McDonald's, left stop trailer, double wide. I saw a man hit my mom one time, really. I heard him so damn bad, I had to hide in Jersey. Called my mama, told her, in the dresser. It's $10 or $20, but there ain't no lesser. As far to take my sister to the picture show. Bang, 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 went Frankie's gun.
He shot me down.
Bang, 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 went Frankie's gun.
Shine it now, shine it now, shine it now, shine it now.
a friend of mine got me off a bender after long-legged Brenda died. I thought we might be on a roll this time, Frankie. I could have swore the box at Hollywood planks, but you see my mama, please tell her I left a little rock in a box in a cellar. That's for the wedding kingdom come. Bang, bang, bang went Frankie's gun. He shot me down.
Was there a particular reason you picked that track, Tony?
That was one I just selected in preparing for the show, because part of this collection is to be able, you know, being a combination of your guys' collection and our collection. I'm really excited for people to be able to come down and discover new music, things that they haven't heard. So I started looking at, you know, yeah, I'm a huge fan of the classic rock and certain bands I'm very, very deep in. But, you know, every so often it's really exciting to go out and discover new music. And that was one I found that just clicked for me. And so I want this to be a discovery experience for the community as well.
Next, a report by Lauren Crazybull from CKXU about the True Contact radio series about missing and murdered Indigenous women.
My name is Lauren Crazybull, and I'm the producer of the True Contact Voices audio documentary series. And I'm just going to start off by talking a little bit about how we started this particular series. It actually came out of a project by the National Campus and Community Radio Association called Resonating Reconciliation. And they were looking for 20 radio stations that could produce 30-minute audio documentaries on the implementation of residential schools. We, CKXU, took that on, and we produced a documentary called True Contact, Resonating Reconciliation in Southern Alberta.
Have you ever heard of a residential school?
Yes. Yes, I've heard of the residential schools.
Yes.
No. Residential school? No, I haven't. I'm from a really small town.
Can you explain your knowledge of it?
It all dates way back to John A. Macdonald putting the railway through Canada and what to do with all of these Native American people that seem to trouble the whites.
Back in the 1800s, they started taking kids from First Nations homes.
Were put in schools by English government.
I believe it was ran by Catholics in Canada.
It was where Aboriginal children were removed from their families and put into schools, usually far away and kind of scattered about, in order to get the Indian out of them, as they said. I think that was actually in paperwork.
Taking the kids from their parents and trying to assimilate European culture into that of the natives.
First word that comes to mind is assimilation.
Assimilated.
Make them more white and assimilate them into the white culture.
To assimilate them to a Western culture.
And taken forcibly to schools where they were educated to be in white Christian values, so they weren't allowed to speak their own language or practice their own culture, and often there was sexual and physical abuse involved as well.
Mistreated and things like that?
Known for, I guess, mistreating ethnic minorities, especially Aboriginals.
And it included abuses and all sorts of atrocities, yeah.
You know, being pulled away from your parents and the way I look at it, it's like jail, eh? Like going to jail. You can't see family. That's how I felt like when I was in here. I think they got used to being in residence. And they got a taste of jail. You know, they used to be in a situation like that. That was when they were in residence. So when they got a little taste of jail, they land back up in there because they have to be there. They're so used to going by the clock, wake up a certain time, you know, in the morning. You have to go to bed too. You know, in other words, you're always told what to do. Eh? It's the same thing as in residence. You're told when to eat, you're told when to go to sleep, and stuff like that. And that's how it is in jail. That's, I mean, well, you know, I'm not saying that's, you know, that's what they're going through, but I pretty well think that's what happens. Eh?
I started my practice of law in southern Alberta, and mainly in Lethbridge, but servicing communities around Lethbridge like Cardston, Fort McLeod, Pincher Creek, Tabor. And as I started my practice, I was shocked by the realization of the number of First Nations people that were involved in the criminal justice system. And what I've learned through my practice and my personal experience is that the number of people involved in the criminal justice system from those communities is wholly and completely disproportional to their representation in the population. And my experience is that most of these people aren't people who are, you know, criminally inclined, but for the numerous social problems that they suffer from, including poverty, lack of opportunities on reserve, substance abuse, chronic substance abuse issues. So I'm talking about people that are involved in the criminal justice system, not people from that community, but a lot of the people that become involved in the criminal justice system do so because of problems with substance dependency, so they commit crimes while they're under the influence of substances. And so in terms of how those people have become involved in the criminal justice system, to my understanding from the stories I've heard and from the information I've been able to glean from clients and from other sources, many of those people either went to residential school themselves, or they are the children of residential school survivors, and their lives have been very much impacted by the experiences that they had in residential school.
What are your feelings on the relationship between the Aboriginal population and the rest of the community?
Indifferent?
I think it's getting a lot better these days, for sure. I think there's less stereotyping going on.
Divided.
Mixed land rights and stuff like that, right? That's more political stuff.
I think there's a lot of mocking of the Aboriginal culture, and there's still quite a bit of racism and a lack of knowledge.
I feel like people who have lived in the community for a long time seem to have tensions. They've already got their judgment kind of in their head.
Especially in Lethbridge. Lethbridge is a lot worse off than other places, southern Alberta in general.
Because they're not seen in the populace so much, that there is this like assumption of difference.
I say they're kind of separated. They seem kind of just in their reserves, and they don't really blend with the rest of the population.
We only get a small taste, see them stumbling through the park and stuff like that, and not typically the good stuff of the community, like all the art.
For a lot of the Aboriginal community, there is issues with what happened in the past. A lot of them grew up with...
There was a pretty good response, and I think that it started a lot of discussion here in Lethbridge, so then we went on to produce a second audio documentary, and that one focused on how the implementation of residential schools in southern Alberta has impacted the current First Nations community, and what sorts of things are coming as a result from those things. And then one of the issues that came up quite a bit in producing those two documentaries was the issue of missing and murdered Indigenous women, since it is a pretty prevalent topic. And it has been for a while since these Indigenous women have been going missing or been found murdered for years and years. But it's kind of coming up just now in the news, and it's coming to be a popular issue to discuss in popular media, which is really good. But it's important that we avoid the sensationalism when talking about these things, and it's also important not to glamorize these issues. And so the third documentary,
Voices of the Silenced, Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women in Canada.
My name is Janet Rogers. I'm Mohawk Tuscarora from the Six Nations Territory in Southern Ontario. On a much more personal level, it was 2013, so just last August, my own sister, she was living in Chicago, and she wanted to go down there and be with a man that she was in love with, and she just had a really, really tough go of it, and it was a completely abusive relationship.
So my name is Sandra Manyfeathers. I grew up with the last name Crazy Bull, but I recently changed it to honor my grandmother. My paternal grandmother's name was Margaret Manyfeathers. Well, I'm connected to the missing and murdered women issue in Canada personally because I've had two sisters who were murdered in Calgary. And these are sisters that I grew up with, and we shared a home. We were younger. I grew up looking at them as role models, confidants, and just people that I thought that were going to be in my life forever.
So just the mere fact of having this information out there, it'll give people, it'll cause them to think, and it won't be any, you know, there's no effort that is in vain. So likewise, there very well may be efforts out there now that are totally against whatever purposes this documentary is trying to gain. There's always an impact with whatever we do. This ripples out into the universe, into the world. It's there. So there will be people out there that are gaining in compassion and understanding for the topic and gaining in knowledge. So it's not in vain, and it's not complete indifference that we're fighting. It's ignorance and willful ignorance that will be attacked by this, and they'll have to sit back and think. We say, you know, contact happened hundreds of years ago. No, we're the first generation to speak English first. Contact only happened within the past 30 years. Like, that's where true contact is happening now, not then. And so it's our generation that is really making the first true contact between sides. And I believe that we are able to get more of the intention out, more of the history out. You know, that entire pyramid has to be flipped to where people are supporting each other and empowering each other. And very much believe that can be done. I'm working on it. I'd like your help. But it can be done. Yeah? So, how do you feel about that?
And that's it for this edition of Groundwire, produced by Ophira Horowitz. This has been Will of France.
And Asa Pisan.
The headlines this week were written by Marilla Studer-Martin from CJLO.
Features this week were produced by Ophira Horowitz, Benjamin Main, and Lauren Crazybull from CKXU.
The Groundwire public service announcement was recorded by Lila Lilemeglef with music by Common Vernacular. We also like to thank Megan Thomas, Tom Radford, Kelly Wilson, Audrey D. Luffy, Frida Worden, and CKCU.
Groundwire is a project of the National Campus and Community Radio Association. Tune in again to hear Groundwire on your local community radio station or download this and past episodes at groundwire.ncua.ca. You can also find Groundwire on the NCRA Program Exchange page, radioforall.net, Media Co-op, and on the Rabble Podcast Network at rabble.ca/podcasts/shows/groundwire.